Can you start off by talking about bail reform and what has happened since the new laws went into place?
So in January 2020 of this year, there were some really drastic changes to the bail laws in the state of New York. And in my opinion, for the better for our community, for our state, and for sort of equalizing the difference between the wealthy and the poor. The biggest change, instead of being a really purely monetary-based bail system, judges are now supposed to analyze cases to look at the ways to impose the least restrictive means to ensure that the defendant comes back to court, and that there are now several categories of offenses that are no longer cash bail eligible, meaning the judge cannot set a dollar amount, which really makes it so that we've equalized the playing field between the wealthy and the poor. So someone who has a lot of money who is alleged to have committed a crime and someone who doesn't have a lot of money who is alleged to commit the same crime will now have similar bail conditions as opposed to one of them being held in on cash bail and the other being able to make bail because they have more money.
In your op-ed piece, you mentioned some cases of how this new bail reform has helped your clients. Could you talk about some of those like examples of how this plays out differently for people?
You know, before this reform went into effect, we had clients who were held in on just what a lot of people would consider very low amounts of bail, $500 bail, you know, maybe $1,000 bail. But these were insurmountable amounts of money for my clients. And the problem was that they would then be held in jail pending the outcome of their case. And while that was going on, they would then lose their jobs because, of course, they couldn't go to their jobs. They would potentially lose custody of their children because, of course, they couldn't take care of their children. You know, they would lose their homes because they couldn't pay for their rent. And then what would happen is they would inevitably fall into just this horrible cycle of coming out and not having that stability anymore. And that's what we see really hurting our clients on a daily basis. So now with this reform, we're seeing our clients being able to be reunited with their families, continuing to go to work and earn an income to pay rent, to take care of their children. And, you know, I mentioned several examples in the op-ed. One example that's very near and dear to my heart is one of our clients, very young, 18 years old. If he had been held in, he would not have been able to continue attending high school. He would probably have not been able to finish high school. And instead, he's going to be able to continue going to high school, earn his diploma while this case is pending. And keep in mind that he's not been found guilty of anything. He hasn't pled guilty to anything or been found guilty of anything. So he should be able to continue doing that. We have other clients who have jobs that they've been able to return to and continue working those jobs and living law-abiding lives while their cases are pending. And of course, dozens and dozens of clients who are returning home to their families and young children who are able to keep being with their families, taking care of their children, and living their lives while they see what happens with their criminal case.
Now, not only has there been bail reform, but there's also been discovery reform. Can you take a moment just to outline what changes have happened there?
Sure. So prior to the January reforms, unlike what I think a lot of people thought about what prosecutors had to give to defendants before trial. In New York State, prosecutors really had to turn over very, very little to the defendant prior to going to trial, did not have to provide police reports prior to the eve of trial, did not have to provide arrest reports, did not have to provide witness statements prior to the eve of particular hearings and trial. And so what ended up happening was decisions were made without that information. Trial was much more by ambush as opposed to being a prepared event for the defense attorney and the defendant. And this reform has really changed that. So now, 15 days after arraignment, which is typically the defendant's first appearance in court on the case, the defendant is entitled to a wide range of material, and that includes all the things I just mentioned and many other things. And so it really finally starts to change the landscape so that the prosecutors have to provide the defendant and his attorney with the material that they have that says you're guilty. And it's what really is making it a much more fair and equal system.
We've done some interviews with our district attorney here up in Rensselaer County, and we've heard and read in the news that there's been a lot of pushback on these bail reform and discovery reform, specifically related to discovery reform. A lot of people are saying that it's too much too soon and too taxing on their resources. What's your response to this?
First of all, you know, one concern for me is the fear that's being injected into the community that's really baseless. People are very concerned that witness names and addresses and phone numbers are being provided to defendants and that then, you know, defendants can go out and find the people that are accusing them of crimes and intimidate them or hurt them, you know, in worst case scenarios. And that's just not what's happening. Defendants and their attorneys are entitled to information about witnesses and about alleged victims, but that does not mean that we get their home address. That does not mean that we get their home phone number. In fact, we are only allowed to get adequate contact information, which in most cases is an email address. So all this does is make it so that the defense attorney can reach out to the alleged victim and reach out to the witnesses. It does not mean that the witnesses or victims have to speak with us. It does not mean that we know where they live. And it certainly doesn't mean that our clients are going out and intimidating them or worse, hurting them. And then with respect to the concern about the cost and sort of, you know, how is it that district attorney's offices are going to deal with this sort of new, as they put it, burden on them? I sort of have two responses to that. The first is just from a pure justice perspective, having the excuse that this might be a little bit more costly or a little bit more taxing on defense attorneys, it is just an excuse, in my opinion, because we're talking about people's lives, right? A defendant is charged with a crime and his life will be forever changed based just on that accusation, let alone a conviction. And for that reason alone, we should be giving the defendant all of this material as soon as possible so that he can make a decision about how to proceed with respect to the case. But even putting that aside, even for people who differ about how, you know, a defendant should be treated, this really isn't such a great burden placed on the district attorney's office. You know, nowadays with the ability to email things, fax things, put things on a CD, we're talking about the mechanics of uploading documents and getting them over to a defense attorney. It's the rare cases where you're having, you know, hundreds of pages, thousands of pages of documents of discovery where there's a real issue of getting it, you know, how is it that we're actually going to take this information and get it to the defense attorney. But in most of these cases, you're talking about maybe dozens of pages, maybe 100 pages of discovery, which easily could be emailed to someone in a PDF. It's not that burdensome at all.
There has been a lot of misinformation that really has been driving a lot of negative public opinion around the bail reform. To the extent that there could be proposed changes to the bail reform laws, can you break down some of the misinformation that is out there?
What's really been happening is a lot of people who are opposed to the bail change have really seized on to people's biggest fears, which are that, you know, murderers and rapists are going to be released into our communities and they're going to go and do harm to people in our community. And no one, myself included, wants to see that happen. But that's just not what is happening as a result of bail reform. You're seeing people who are charged with low-level offenses in most cases and non-violent felonies being released pre-trial. This is not after conviction. This is pre-trial, pre-plea, pre-sentencing, being released under conditions which assure that they will come back to court. And that's what the purpose of bail in New York is, that someone will come back to court, will abide by the court's order to come back to court. And there are studies out there which show that the time spent in jail pre-trial affects someone so negatively that typically that person is more likely to commit additional crimes than if they were released pre-trial, as these individuals are now being released. So the negative effects actually can be compounded by holding someone in pretrial than if they're released and allowed to go back into their communities, as I said before, take care of their families, go to their jobs, get an education. Those are all the things which lead people to continue leading a law-abiding life. Keeping someone in jail tends to then get someone into the inevitable cycle of committing additional crimes.
As state Senate Democrats propose changes to this newly enacted bail reform law, what is your response to this?
You know, it took a very, very, very long time for this bail reform for it to be actually passed and become enacted into our law. And so what I think people should be wary of and what they should be paying attention to is a quick change to this law that took so long to become enacted. We're only in March. It's not even been a full 3 months of judges and lawyers and defendants and communities dealing with new laws. And so to start making decisions about how the law should be changed when it's only been a couple of months, it should be troublesome to people because we haven't really been able to see the pros and the cons play out in the way that we should before we decide to start making changes.
Anna Kaminsky, what should we be paying attention to moving forward?
Well, I just think that people should really educate themselves about what these laws are and how much they're really truly benefiting our communities, that they benefit each one of us individually. You know, as a criminal defendant, you're presumed innocent until proven otherwise. And it's very important that as a charged individual, we continue to remember that the person is only accused, only charged, and has not pled guilty or been convicted of anything. And so to that end, that person should be able to continue leading a law-abiding life, be released on bail with non-monetary conditions attached to it, have the wealthy and the poor be treated equally when it comes to setting bail, and of course, hold the law enforcement responsible if they're going to charge someone, which is a life-changing event, that they have the discovery available to the defendant. And that's what these new laws really do. They just say, prosecutor, you must hand over the information that you have if you're going to charge someone with a crime. All these changes to the laws are really for the better, and they really do protect all of our rights.